Some people are, one of the concerns, we're going to talk about the 16 personalities or Myers-Briggs personality test tonight and learn about our own Myers-Briggs type. And some of the concerns people have about learning about personalities is it's going to box somebody in, it's going to limit you, it's going to excuse. And why do we want to learn about our personality? Well, one reason is that it helps us learn to know ourselves and each other. It helps us understand why we're wired. I know when I took the DISC profile, when I took this one, there were light bulbs that went on. And every time I've listened to Danny Silk's on his DISC profile, every time I'm like, oh, that's why. And things, more and more things click in. It also helps you find the golden people that they might not be able to see themselves. ISFJs are loyal people. They're loyal friends and they're going to stick by you. ENFPs are enthusiastic optimists. And when you realize that, you can start to call out the golden people. It also, if you think about ENTPs, are argumentative. Are they argumentative or are they willing to challenge or question the status quo? So it all depends. Sometimes an ENTP will grow up thinking that they're argumentative and they constantly are, and people think they're argumentative when one of their strengths is they're willing to question the status quo. It also can help communicate and meet needs. Those who are J's, and we'll get into these letters, so those who are J's, they need structure. They need closure. Where P's, they need flexibility and they need openness. And you start to realize when you're working with someone who's different than you, you're realizing, he needs structure and I need a whole lot more flexibility, so how are we going to work together on this? And you learn that, and you learn to appreciate that. You realize that extroverts, they need social interaction. But introverts, they need alone time. And that's the one we're most familiar with. So it helps us learn and communicate needs. And it really isn't meant to limit or expand anything. My daughter Carrie, her personality, she's an ENTJ. They're the CEOs and they're the villains. They're the ones, all the movies, they're the villains. And most people would have told her if she'd known she was an ENTJ, it may have hindered her from going into nursing because they're not as easily empathetic. ENTJs aren't. But at the same time, she can make quick decisions under stress, and she likes to be in charge. She likes to have that, and she's realizing that this challenge and of nursing and the constant changing patients and floor, all that is good for her. But if she'd allowed her, the fact that she's an ENTJ, to limit it, she may never have gone into nursing. So it's not meant to limit you. And it's not meant to define you, but to indicate what's already there. If I'm talking with you and you talk about how you bake some cookies for somebody and last week you had made some cupcakes and you needed to get home because you're going to make a cake, I soon realize that you like to bake. So if I say, you like to bake, I'm not defining you, but I'm just expressing back to you another language if you already told me that you prefer. And if you think about the fact that a song can be written in the key of C, but there are a lot of songs written in the key of C that are very, very different. And we can take any song that's out there and turn it into the key of C. So every song you know, we can put it in the key of C. And there's so much variation. But a musician is going to know if it's in the key of C, they know the chord progression. And even if it's in a minor, the key of C is A minor, they know that. So there's some similarities. There are some things that they can expect if they're going to play a song in the key of C. If you're going to ask me to play a song in the key of B flat, forget it. I'll say I can't play it because I know the chord progression well enough to know that I can't finger those things on a guitar yet. On a piano, I can. But I'll say, hey, can we change it to the key of C? And then I'm good because you know what to expect. Same thing with art. You got impressionist art, you've got Renaissance art, and you've got abstract art. You got these genres, these categories of art, but there's a lot of flexibility, a lot of variation within that. And it's the same with the personality type. You might be an ISTJ, but there's still a lot of variation. There could be 10 ISTJs in this room, and there's still going to be a lot of difference. In our family, we have 3 ENTPs, and we're all different. Some of them are a lot more empathetic than I am. Others are a lot more, the other one is a lot more disciplined than I've been. So there's variation in that, even though they're the same personality type. But it's always important when you're looking at a personality that you are who God says you are, that he's designed you uniquely. And when we take a personality test, it is not meant to box you in. It's not meant to say, no, God can still call you to things that you think, that doesn't fit my personality type. Just yesterday, I was I think it was yesterday, I was on my home from somewhere thinking, because I've been going through this, I'm thinking, I'm doing a lot of things lately that J's typically in that, or for J's. And I started questioning it. I thought, no, I'm not going to limit myself. I'm enjoying it, and we'll see where it leads. But I'm not going to say, no, I'm not going to do that because I'm not a J, or I need to stop doing that. So what is Myers-Briggs? Myers-Briggs is a test that's named after, it's a personality typing that's named after a mother-daughter duo, Catherine Biggs and Isabel Briggs Myers. They were fascinated with Carl Jung's personality theories, and they actually interacted with him, talked with him. But the reason they developed the personality profile and the testing is after World War II, women were entering the workforce, and Isabel Myers saw an opportunity to use personality testing to help these women find the jobs they were best suited for. Think about this. You have women who've always been stay at home, their mothers stayed at home, their grandmothers stayed at home, and all they've done is cook and clean and do laundry and watch babies. And now they're being thrust into the workforce. And a personality testing, Isabel Myers saw, was the perfect way to find out how they're wired and find jobs that suited them. But even beyond that, they began to believe that if people could find the work they're best suited for, and then they could learn to recognize who they were and honor the difference and everybody else, they could honor the differences between people, then world peace could become a reality. So world peace was really the driving force behind their work. If I can understand me and I can understand you, we can get along a whole lot better. And there can be peace. We can have a relationship. So they conducted extensive research and published their findings in a book. And the book is entitled Gifts Differing. And it comes from Paul's words to the Romans, having gifts differing according to the grace given to all. Now, I like the ENTP. I've taken the Enneagram. I've taken the DISC. And I like the DISC. I feel like the Myers-Briggs is a little more detailed, there's a little more variation. I'm in it. And it explains a few more things. I've taken the Enneagram. I don't know enough about it, and it didn't make sense to me, and I haven't really learned enough about it. Other people like the Enneagram. There are other personalities. I like the Myers-Briggs because I'm an ENTP, but I'm not just an ENTP. I'm an E. That means something. I'm an N, and that means something distinct about me. I'm a T. That tells me more about me, and I'm a P. And each of those letters stand for something that show my preferences, that reveal my preferences, that help me know myself better. But then I can also know you better if I know the letters that you are. But there, again, we don't want to turn this into something that's boxing us in or telling us who we are, defining us. And it's important to recognize this personality testing is telling you it's really about your preferences. So I want everybody to cross your arms. Just cross your arms, all right? So now, how many of you put your left arm over your right? Okay, and how many of you put your right arm over the left? You put your left. All right, now I want you to switch. Put the other arm over. It's uncomfortable. See, it's a preference, and it's a preference you don't even think about. So we all have physical preferences. I'm going to cross my arm, I'm going to do that. I use my right hand. My husband uses his left. We also generally have one eye that we wink. Some people can wink with two eyes, but there's one that's more natural. And so these are preferences, things that we've developed over time, and we just do them naturally. And just as we have these physical preferences, where we cross the arms, which hand we use, we also have mental preferences, processes that we use naturally, preferred ways of processing information and interacting with the world around us. And there are preferences that feel most comfortable, more natural. You can do things that aren't your preference, but it doesn't feel as natural, and it can be more draining. Now, if I say, hey, I see that you're left-handed, does that box you in? Does that limit you? Actually, it helps me know better. In our family, in Butch's family, there's almost a dozen left-handers. And in my family, there's three. In our immediate family, I don't know if any of the grandchildren are left-handed. I'm thinking one or two, so that would add one or two more. But it was funny when we would arrange the seating when we were all together. We'd always put the left-handers on the corner so that we're not, or put a left-hander next to a left-hander, so we're not bumping arms. We know you're left-handed, we know the left-handers, and we sort of arrange kind of the seating so that it facilitates an easier, more enjoyable mealtime. And the same way, when I know your preferences, when you know mine, it can help us fellowship together without bumping into each other so much. Knowing that two of my children were left-handed affected the way I taught them handwriting. it affected what I expected of them. Not that I expected less, but I realized, and as I talk with them about improving their handwriting, I realize their frustrations. And at one point in time, I talked with Butch, so how do you write? And when I saw the way he wrote, I tried to encourage them to do that because he didn't do this. But they kept saying, Mom, it erases when I move across the page. And so he puts his hand under the print, and so it helped me teach them. And similarly, when we know the preferences of each other as far as our personality, we can help each other grow and develop. If I know that you're an introvert and we've had a lot of conferences and I've relied on you and we've been together a lot and you're starting to get a little bit frustrated or moody or whatever, I'm thinking I'm going to realize this isn't because you're angry or it's because you're an I and you just had way too much social stimulation and you need some time. And I can encourage you, I think you ought to take some time off. Why don't you get yourself some alone time because I know you're an I. Now, some people have varying degrees of strength with other hands. Some people are left-handed, but they can also use the right hand or vice versa. And some people, I'm so right dominant, there's little I can do with my left hand. And so there's varying degrees, but the same way with our mental preferences. There are some people that are a little more ambidextrous as far as the preferences, but there is still one they prefer. So I gave you guys a packet, and what we're going to do is we're going to go through explaining each of these. Myers-Briggs has four dichotomies. Here you go, Sherry. There's four questions that you ask. And we're going to use that. And if you took the test that I showed you, or the personality test, the link I gave, you might have come with it. But we're also going to do it here, and you're going to be able to figure out yours. So there are four dichotomies of these preferences. And they are boiled down to four questions, okay? Now remember, these are preferences. The first question, the first dichotomy, is your orientation. Which is your favorite world? Is it the external world or the internal world? Are you extroverted or introverted? The second question is, how do you process information? And I'm going to go through all these. It's going to be a lot of information. That's why I gave you a packet of papers so that you can kind of chew on it for a while. The second question is, how do you process information? Do you do it by sensing with all your senses, or do you do it by hunches and intuition? The third question is, how do you make decisions? Is it feeling? In other words, you put yourself into the situation and know how it's going to affect people, or are you outside the situation? Are you a thinker? And then the fourth dichotomy is then, how do you manage or handle your external world? And we're going to go into all these, either by judging or perceiving, and we're going to talk about these questions too. So we're going to start, first thing I want to talk about, I'll probably talk about this later. Some of these words have negative connotations to them. And the judging, there's a judging function. That doesn't mean you're judgmental. It's how you process the information and how you judge that information, how you make a decision. You've gathered information, you're going to make a decision. That's the judging function. And we'll probably talk more about some others as we go. I have this up here too. So you can see these four dichotomies. We have extroversion and introversion. Sensing and intuition. We use the N for intuition. They use the N for intuition. Because if it was the I, we'd have two I's. It'd be more confusing. And then thinking and feeling, judging and perceiving. All right? So we're going to start with the middle two. How do I process information? And how do I make decisions? We spend our entire day doing these two mental activities. I get up in the morning and I check the weather. That's gathering information, and then I decide what to wear. That's making a decision. That's perceiving, gathering information, and judging, what am I going to wear? I might look at my to-do list, okay? And in my calendar, I'm gathering information. So do I have time to take Nathan? And I make a decision. If I'm going to take Nathan to work, or I'm going to see if Christina can. Your whole day is spent either gathering information or making decisions. These two mental functions. And so in Myers-Briggs lingo, gathering information is perceiving, and making decisions is judging. It's not judgmental, and neither is perceiving mean you're perceptive. It's just a word for that mental activity you're doing. You follow me? So the first question is, how do I process information? There are two opposing ways of perceiving, gathering information. Some people will gather information through their senses, what they see, hear, sense, or touch. Smell, they're gathering information. These are the ones that notice details. And they're paying more attention to concrete sensory information. Those are sensors. Or people will gather information from hunches. insight that pops up in from their subconscious, just like that. They're paying more attention to abstract, intuitive information rather than concrete. So we have sensors. They're gathering information through their senses. They're detailed. I'm going to explain them more, so I don't need to get too much. And it's concrete information. Intuitives go by hunches, gut feelings, more abstract. Okay? Now, so we're going to describe each of these. You also have a piece of paper. I'll get to it. I don't want to get too far ahead. Well, I'll describe them first, then we're going to do it. Okay? Sensing. Now, each of us gather information through senses and intuition. We're going to, and all of these dichotomies, you're going to use both. There's just one you prefer, like I said. And both are important. So when we say concrete information or hunches, sometimes you can say, well, hunches aren't as accurate. A person's an intuitive, their gut hunches are just as accurate as someone who's gathered information through their concrete senses. When there's times when we are going along and I'll say, when did that building go up? And he's like, honey, that was built a year ago. And I never noticed it, no matter how many times you drove by it. He's an S, he's a sensor, he's noticing details. And me, when I'm driving by that building, I'm probably noticing because my mind, I'm not noticing because my mind is somewhere thinking something. I'm not paying attention to my surroundings. It's also the reason why I never notice cobwebs or details at the house, okay? Sensors can get frustrated with intuitives because we tend to jump all over the place. We don't finish sentences. We interrupt ourselves and everyone else. Leave out details. We tend to speak in metaphors and not finish an entire train of thought. And I was talking to my kids, and Carrie said, Christine said, that's you. You interrupt yourself so many times. You don't finish your sentences. On the other hand, intuitives deal with the sensor's tendency to focus on every single detail and every step and talk about facts or details. Sensors tend to focus on the past or the present, where intuitives tend to focus on the future. Now, when intuitives are talking with sensors and the sensors are giving all the details, intuitives aren't interested in details, but they're seeing the big picture. And they're ready to leap past that and get to that part of it, but then the sensor doesn't feel heard. They feel like, well, you think you can read your mind. It's not that. You've described enough that I'm able to see the big picture. It's like, oh, okay, I can see where you're going. I'm like, but I'm not done talking yet. And they can feel unheard. Now, this perceiving function can be extroverted. In other words, I can use this perceiving function in the external world, or I can use it in the internal world, and we'll talk more about that later. 73.3% of those who take the Myers-Briggs are sensors, and 26.7% are intuitives. So that means sensors outnumber intuitives 3-1. So you have a paper here. You have a chart with the perceiving information. Okay? And we're just going to go down through this, and I'm going to ask you to choose one. There are some of them that are going to be hard for you to choose. All right? If you're a sensor, well, do you like and trust facts, or do you prefer meaning and theory? And just quick gut, just decide one. Choose one. Circle, underline it. Are you detail-oriented and you like detail work, or big picture-focused and you enjoy design work? Are you reality-based and you trust experience, or are you possibility-focused and trust hunches? And just pick one, because you're not going to be all one, probably. You might be, but that's not too common. Do you prefer specifics, notice details, or do you prefer generalities and you notice patterns? You give and follow precise directions, or do you prefer to be guided by landmarks? Are you practical, you live in the here and now? Am I going too fast? Or are you theoretical and you focus on the future? I don't want to give you too much time to think about all the times you're the other. Do you remember details about past or present? Or do you imagine the future? When you're speaking, are you literal and precise and to the point? Or are you more figurative, metaphorical, sometimes even exaggerating? Do you enjoy physical humor or slapstick comedy? Or clever humor, puns, and wordplay? Clever humor, puns, and wordplay. Are you concrete, step by step, or abstract and roundabout? It's a little bit harder. That's a little bit harder to think. Okay, what's? Do you tend to think sequentially with lists and outlines, or more globally using mind maps and visual note taking? Are you short and certain to cover all your bases, or do you leap over steps and kind of jump around? Do you work steadily and sequentially, or more in bursts of inspired energy? Do you have a tendency to mention a fact only once or as needed, or do you repeat yourself when you're talking? Do you use concrete language and communicate using shorter, on-point sentences, or abstract language using longer, more complex sentences? Do you prefer nonfiction that makes a clear point, or fiction with hidden symbolic messages? And then the last one is, do you have a tendency to read one book at a time, start to finish, taking information in a one meal at a time style and recall specifics? Or do you read several books at once, may not even finish any of them, but you take in your information more like a buffet? Take, pick and choose what you want, and if you're done with that buffet, you move on to another one, and you tend to make connections. It was a quick run through. This is your perceiving function, and put it aside. We're going to come back to that later. You can add them up if you want to, and then circle the one that has the most, okay? There's going to be a lot of information today. I'm going to try not to... So that's how we're gathering information. So we gather our information either through our senses and concrete and experience or through abstract hunches, okay? So we've gathered information. Now we need to make a decision, all right? So there are two ways that we can make a decision. We can step outside the situation and decide based on impersonal objective logic. That's your thinkers right here. Or you can step inside the situation and decide based on personal subjective values. Now, here's another word. We tend to think objective is more accurate, but feelers are just as accurate in their decisions as thinkers are if they're using, because they're going by their values. All right? Thinkers trust logic and they approach problems and decisions with more distance than feelers do. Feelers have to get into it. They trust their own values and they approach problems more personally and subjectively than thinkers. Thinkers consider what the problem is. Feelers consider who the problem affects. Thinkers tend to approach with a true-false dichotomy, wrong-right, whereas feelers tend to come to things with an agreeable or disagreeable view, perspective. Now remember, neither is better or more trustworthy than the other. I think the age of reason has caused us, or our scientific age, to believe that thinkers' thinking process is more accurate, more dependable than the feeling process. But when feelers make decisions based on the way they're wired and based on their values, it can be just as trustworthy. We can and do use both. Thinkers can feel and feelers can think. Thinkers aren't cold, heartless people who have no feelings for anybody and don't know how to be empathetic, and feelers aren't unintelligent or completely driven by emotion. It's another one of these words, feelers, that is like, well, if you're a feeler, I don't want you to think, okay, feelers aren't driven by emotion. We have that idea. Well, if you're a feeler and you decide based on feelings, that's not dependable. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about someone who puts themselves into the situation, wants to know how it's going to affect everybody before they're going to make a decision. And it's got to be true to their values. Thinking and feeling are two different ways of judging or deciding, and both are valid. Now, we have, like I said, well, I'm going to read a quote from Isabel Myers. To thinkers, the idea of evaluating by means of feeling sounds flighty, unreliable, and uncontrolled. But thinkers are not judges of feeling because they naturally judge all feelings by their own. And there's a thinker's feeling function is relatively undeveloped and not very reliable. So as a thinker, my feeling is not really developed, so I can judge a feeler saying, well, yours is not reliable, but it's because I'm basing it on my own, and mine's more undeveloped than a natural feeler. When feeling is well developed, it's a stable instrument for discriminating the worth of personal values, selecting as guiding stars those values that rank highest. So thinkers are not necessarily more intelligent, like I said. The feeling process in a thinker is not nearly as developed. Now, for those taking the Myers-Briggs, 40% were thinkers and about 60% were feelers. So that means feelers slightly outnumber thinkers. Now, of those who were thinkers, only 25% were female. So there are three times more male thinkers than female. This is the only function that has a sizable gender difference, is a thinking feeling. That might help explain why female thinkers have a hard time feeling normal, have a hard time connecting or understanding their own gender. It can also help us understand why women are considered less logical. As a general rule, more women are feelers and not thinkers. And so their process, their decision-making process is less logical, therefore often considered less trustworthy. And another difficulty is the qualities we often associate with feelers are often associated with being female. They're warm, tender, compassionate, and these are often equated, these are female qualities that are also associated very much with feeling preference. And so when someone displays these things, they're not necessarily being effeminate. When a man has these tendencies, they're not being effeminate. They're a feeler. And the same with female thinkers. They tend to fall outside of our preconceived ideas of what it means to be a female. So this is the one dichotomy that we thought men are thinkers and women are feelers because of the natural general tendency, but that doesn't necessarily mean it. So now what I want, you got your judging function. Okay, this is a little shorter. You can do the same thing. We're going to read these things. You're going to choose one. Okay. Do you tend to be objective? That's on the left side of your chart, or subjective? Are you focused on principles or values? That's a little hard to kind of just really discern. What's the difference between principles and values? Principles are a little more concrete, a little less subjective. Are you policy-minded, or do you like to consider the circumstances before making a decision? We have a policy in place. This is what we need to do. This is what we've done with everybody. Or you're like, wait a minute, let's just look at the circumstances around here. Let's see what's going on here. There's more that we need to think about. Do you value and promote justice, or is mercy what you tend to value and promote? Now, we all value justice and mercy, but which is the one you're going to be most known for? Thinkers tend to categorize things where feelers want to harmonize. So do you want to categorize stuff, or do you want to harmonize everything? Do you enjoy critique and find criticism necessary and helpful? Do you enjoy appreciation and sometimes find criticism hurtful? Do you prefer to analyze or empathize? And if I'm going too fast, you know, you'd always do this at home too, because that's why I gave them to you. Do you value firmness or connection and persuasion? Do you make decisions based on what sounds logical and reasonable? Or do you make your decisions based on the impact it's going to have on people? Do you have a hard time saying no? Do you tend to be questioning or accommodating? And then the last one, thinkers ask the question, why? Feelers ask the question, who? And while we're finishing up that, these charts were all received from, a friend of mine wrote a book, and I wanted to bring it, but I forgot to grab it. She wrote a book, Brilliantly You. Her name is Michelle Bath Cuss. She was in the teacher's track at Welton Academy with me, and she's been teaching the Myers-Briggs for 20 years. But she has a really good book if you want to have a book about it and learn more about it. Hers is excellent. All right. Now, these are our mental functions, and when we put them together, okay, so you're gathering information and you're making decisions, okay? And there's four different things that we can put together, four different types that we're going to have when we get together. We're going to have sensors who are also thinkers, and sensors who are feelers. But we can have intuitives who are thinkers and intuitives who are feelers. Okay? So we've got these four different cognitive types, okay? And you have a chart. I gave you a chart to kind of there's a chart you have with it on there, okay? No, it's not San Francisco and St. Louis, and it's in the New Testament. And STs focus on facts about things collected through their senses and evaluated by impersonal analysis. They're practical, matter-of-fact, excelling in impersonal analysis of concrete facts, giving you a lot of information. And part of the reason why I'm going over this is you're going to find yourself or other people in it as we go over it. Those who are sensors and feelers, they focus on facts about people rather than things. And it's collected through their senses and approached with personal warmth. They're sociable, friendly people, applying their warmth and concern to immediate practical situations. NFs, which are intuitive feelers, like the SF, the sensor feelers, they are warm. They have a personal warmth about them. But they're focused on possibilities, such as new projects, rather than concrete situations. NF. I'm not going that order. I just put them up there. I'm going on the order I have my notes. NFs are enthusiastic, insightful people, and they apply their warmth and creativity to meet human needs. And then we have NTs, intuitive thinkers. Like the intuitive feelers, they focus on possibilities, but they approach them with an impersonalness analysis, like the STs. They're logical, ingenious, applying their theoretical minds to solving problems. Okay, that's a lot, right? That's your functions, okay? So you're either an SF, an ST, SF, NT, or NF, okay? Here it goes. I'm watching the time. We're going to take a break here. So these are our two questions. How do we process information? And how do we make decisions? Okay? We have another dichotomy. And which is your favorite world? This is probably the most common personality dichotomy, but also comes with a lot of misunderstanding. We have tended to think of extroversion and introversion as those who are friendly and those who are shy. Those who are outgoing and they like to be with people, or those who would rather just sit around at home and not do anything with people anyway. They'll be in a book, okay? Introversion and extroversion don't necessarily describe our social, I don't want to use the term ability. It doesn't really describe our social activities. But it has to do with which is your favorite world. Is your favorite world your external world of people, things, ideas, activities? No, people, things, and activities. Or is it your internal world of thoughts, ideas, feelings, reflections? You're energized by the world you like to be in, the world you spend your most time in. Now, we all live in both worlds simultaneously. Your favorite world will energize you. It'll inspire you. It's the world you enjoy being in. You take refuge in it. It's the one that feels comfortable to you. And when you feel drained, it's the world that recharges you, energizes you. And it's where you will put your energy, emotion, and inspiration. Attention and inspiration. Okay, so it's not, you can have very friendly introverts, and you can have very quiet extroverts. My Welton Academy mentor, Eric, he's an extrovert who likes to have people in his space, but he doesn't really feel like he needs to be interacting with them. He's one of the quietest extroverts I've ever known. My husband, on the other hand, is an introvert, and he's one of the friendliest introverts. He's always making friends. He's always drawing people out of their shells, talking with complete strangers. Now, so extroverts, they gain psychological energy from their outer world of people, things, and activities. They pay more attention to their external world than their internal world. It might be people, but it could also be things or activities. Okay? They are not necessarily chatty party people like we tend to think. For some extroverts, having an external stimuli like a radio or a TV is enough to provide them with outer world energy. If they have a TV going. I've heard of people, I don't do it, but I've heard of people just having a TV going while they're cleaning. They're not even paying attention to what's on. But it gives you that external stimulation. Now, we have this idea that extroverts just don't like to be by themselves. They do. We do. Extroverts need time alone. And they enjoy the time alone. They just have They have their limits as far as external stimulation, but it's not as reached as fast as an introvert, and it varies. And they need less time alone than an introvert does. Introverts, though, on the other hand, gain psychological energy from their inner world of thoughts, ideas, reflections, and feelings. They pay attention to that world, the inside of them. Now, it's interesting that introverts have a harder time winding down or falling asleep at night because they're finally alone. And now their mind can start working. They're alone with their thoughts. And so it's harder for them to say. Where an extrovert, their silence just puts them to sleep because they've been stimulated. The external world stimulates them, and their head hits the pillow, and they go to sleep as soon as their head hits the pillow. Introverts, like I said, can be incredibly social and friendly, but they need more time to recharge. Now, brain scans have actually shown differing hardwiring of the brain. So it showed that introverts have a higher basal state of arousal, which basically means they're overstimulated most of the time. They're already slightly aroused at a basal state. They're already more aroused and stimulated in their brains than an extrovert is. Extrovert has a lower, so they can have more stimulation before they're even feeling the same that an introvert is on a normal basis. Now, the interesting thing, I'm not going to explain that. Well, I was thinking, so this, which is what world is my favorite? This letter, this one, and this one, like I said, deals with your orientation. Okay, I'm going to get to this one. This is your favorite world, and this is how you manage your external world. This is what people see, your external world. And so there's more communication difficulties between these two than there are between the middle two, even though there can be. So extrovert, the communication between these can be to extroverts and introverts. Extroverts can be incredibly frustrated how long it takes an introvert to think and express their thoughts. And introverts can be very frustrated because if you had a time to get a word out and the extrovert is already talking, I'm like, but I gave you a chance. I'm like, and the introvert's like, I didn't even have a time to gather my thoughts yet. They need more time to gather their thoughts. And introverts can be frustrated by an extrovert's tendency to hog the conversation. If you're an extrovert and you're talking with an introvert, become comfortable with long periods of silence. Extroverts often start with a half-baked idea that becomes fully baked as they talk it out, which baffles an introvert because they've already taken the necessary time to fully bake their idea before they express it. What in the world? They're like, how can you even be trusted if you're because you haven't really thought through it? Extroverts tend to finish other people's sentences, especially extroverted intuitives, because they can see the big picture, and they're already going there, and then they tend to finish other people's sentences. And it can make introverts feel like they're not heard and they're not being listened to. Extroverts value talking things out dynamically, where introverts value being given time and space to speak, to think, to speak, and then your ear to listen. So like I said, if you're an extrovert with an introvert, give them time to think. Now, some people say, well, I'm an ambivert. Well, if we look about whether it's based on shyness or outgoingness, that then maybe you can, because sometimes I'm shy. But and if you want to believe you're an ambivert, you can, but I'm not going to change your mind. But it doesn't really help you understand yourself better. Often what gets us thinking we're ambiverts is this idea that extroverts are always extroverted and introverts are always introverted, and that's not true. No one is 100% extroverted or 100% introverted. You could be an introvert but be very extroverted with a close group of friends, a small close group of friends. So depending on the mood, the situation, surrounding life events, I'm an extrovert, but if I'm overwhelmed with a lot of life, I turn into an introvert because I don't really want to process externally right now what's going on inside. So I would encourage you to choose one as we read over them. Okay, an ambivert will tend to think they're dead center, partly because they're energized by some social situations and drained by others, but that's normal for all of us. The question is, what is your overall preference most of the time over your life? We're all gonna fall somewhere on these scales. So as I read over these, I want you to just choose one. Where's my chart? You see my thing. Is your attention focused outward toward people, things, action, activity? or is it more inward toward feelings, concepts, ideas, and reflections? Are you energized after a day of being with people? Or are you energized by a day of being alone? Do you prefer breadth, that's a hard word, you're broad and extensive, or do you prefer depth, focused and intensive? Extroverts can have a lot of friends, but not really close, and it doesn't mean they're superficial. They don't have time. I mean, they have a broad range of friends. Introverts have tendency to have a few very close, deep friendships. Extroverts can you multitask? Well, and some people say all moms can multitask. But so, as a general rule, can you multitask and move from one task to another without having to regroup? Okay, we all have to move from one task. Let me back up here. If you're an extrovert, you move from one task. If you're interrupted and distracted, are you able to easily get back on point right away? For an introvert, they're focused, they prefer one task at a time, and if they're interrupted or distracted, it takes longer for them to get back into their focused state, okay? If you've heard preachers who can take rabbit trails and always get right back on point, they don't even lose where they're at. It always boggles my mind they can do that. But their distractions, they don't need time to get back into focus. Extroverts often enjoy, so I'm wondering what these two are talking about up here. Why? Oh, okay, yeah.
I hope that's what
they're doing. Oh, I'm like, okay, hurry here. Anyway, are you sociable and enjoy sharing your space, or are you territorial? And again, we don't like that word, territorial, because it sounds selfish. What we mean by territorial, do you have your space? I don't really have my space. I'm an extrovert, and so I am sociable. I don't really think of having my space. Do you have an area that you feel like is your space, and you're like, okay, I need my space? That's more territory, and it's okay. Do you prefer interaction, and you welcome interruptions, and prefer talking on the phone or face-to-face, which is a faster-paced communication? Or do you prefer concentration, and you don't like interruptions, and you prefer to communicate through email or text because it's slower and allows you time to internally process? Do you have multiple relationships? Extroverts tend to have multiple relationships, and they're usually self-revealing. They're easy to get to know. Introverts have fewer but deeper, close relationships, and they're more private. They're a little bit harder to get to know. Are you active, fast-paced, quick, or more reflective, careful, slower-paced? A lot of these words that we're talking about sometimes have negative connotations in our minds. Slower pace and quicker pace. It makes it sound like an extrovert can get more done. That's not what we're talking about. Slower pace is good. Or we think that extroverts are always in a hurry if you associate quick pace and slow pace. Extroverts tend to act, maybe reflect, then act again. Introverts tend to reflect, maybe act, and then reflect some more. Yes. Extroverts focus on external events, and introverts focus on internal reactions. Extroverts process their thoughts aloud, and they're often not fully formed until they're processed externally. Whereas introverts process their thoughts in their heads, and once they've expressed it, it's fully formed because it's had the time internally to get fully formed. Extroverts have a tendency to sometimes speak without even realizing they've said it out loud. Did I just say that? Introverts, on the other hand, forget to speak what's going on inside their head, thinking they've communicated it. Well, I answered your question. Oh, but I did it in my head. I don't realize I haven't answered the question. So you're going to fall somewhere? Just choose one. This is your favorite world. Are you with me? What if you don't know? And, well, choose one in each of those things, and then just add them up. You may fall really close in the middle, close to the middle, and then you just choose one. And as we go through, describe, and I feel like for me, as I've gone through combining all of these things, it gives clearer picture to my what I am. Actually, when I did the S and the N thing, I thought I was closer, more of an S than I was. I'm an N, and I thought I was more of an S because there are some S things that I like. So just choose one. If you add them up, whichever you have majority, circle that letter on your first page that has the arrows on it. So now we've discussed the mental functions that make up our day, perceiving, gathering info, and judging, making decisions, and the two different processes for each one of those functions. Okay, you're either gathering information by your senses or your intuition, and you're deciding based on thinking or feeling. Okay, and now we've also discussed our favorite world, the external world, extroversion, or the internal world, introversion. And the fourth dichotomy now answers the question, how do you handle or manage your external world? Before we go on, I'm thinking this is a good time to take a break. Do y'all want a break?